Brought to you by the Small Business Payments Alliance. According to a new survey, an overwhelming majority of small business owners oppose additional government regulations on the electronic payment system, as called for in the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. Don't let Durbin-Marshall pile new mandates on Main Street small businesses. Learn more at smallbusinesspaymentsalliance.com.
On April 1st, the Florida Supreme Court issued a pair of decisions on abortion that led the Biden campaign to declare that Florida, which Democrats have lost twice to Donald Trump, was now winnable. The only problem with that? Some of Florida's abortion rights advocates want the president to stay away. On Monday, Florida's highest court did two things. One, it upheld a 15-week abortion ban that was passed in 2022. That decision will trigger into law starting in May a 6-week abortion ban passed last year. Secondly, the court cleared the way for Amendment 4, a November referendum that, if passed, will enshrine the right to abortion in the Florida Constitution. You can understand why the Biden campaign saw these developments as a major political opportunity. Florida voters are now in the unique position of living with an extremely restrictive abortion law and having the opportunity to get rid of it on Election Day. And this is where things get a little complicated between the Biden campaign and activists in Florida. Changing the Florida Constitution via referendum requires a 60% majority, which means Amendment 4 needs support from a lot of Floridians who would never back Joe Biden. All of this makes Anna Hokemer's job one of the trickiest in American politics this year. Hokemer runs the Florida Women's Freedom Coalition, a PAC that did much of the heavy lifting to get Amendment 4 on the ballot. Her assignment now is to get Republicans and independents to support Amendment 4 in November, which means that Biden's newfound interest in Florida, while not completely unwelcome, does require some finesse. On today's show, Hokemer and I discuss that delicate relationship, as well as the lessons she's learned from the 11 post-Dobbs elections about abortion rights, what she found disappointing in Biden's State of the Union speech, the practical and political fallout from the 6-week ban in Florida, and whether or not she would want Donald Trump to endorse Amendment 4 and be an ally for her cause. I'm Ryan Lizza, and this is Playbook Deep Dive. Let's start, Anna, with a little bit about your background and what your organization is and how you got involved in it.
Well, how far back in my childhood do you want to go?
sometimes these do turn into therapy sessions. That is true.
Exactly. I mean, this, the most straightforward way to answer it really is to just say, you know, I was a local elected official. I am a local elected official here in Florida.
I ran vice mayor of Pinecrest, for people that don't know.
Yes. I'm, you know, it's a nonpartisan seat. All local elections in Florida are nonpartisan, municipal and county elections. Well, that's about to change on the county level. But in any case, so my involvement in politics has always been very strongly on the local level. I do police, potholes, parks, tree trimming. You know, I make the water come out of the tap kind of politics, not particularly big ideological swings from home plate. But I've always campaigned very openly with my sort of political heart on my sleeve. And so it wasn't such a big political leap for me to suddenly say, hey, wait a minute, there's this major issue. It's a human rights issue. It's a public health issue. It's a women's rights issue. It's a human dignity issue happening in Florida, and I want to be involved. And so I started calling around and saying, what's going on with efforts to protect access to abortion in Florida? How can I be involved? And so we ended up creating a PAC called Florida Women's Freedom Coalition. It's a bipartisan PAC, single issue. All we do is work on the issue of abortion access in Florida and on passing this particular amendment. And we joined Floridians Protecting Freedom. And Floridians Protecting Freedom is the umbrella organization. It's made up of 6 organizations. That's the official sponsor of this amendment to the Florida Constitution. And it's made up of Planned Parenthood, ACLU, SEIU 1199, Florida Rising and a group called Florida Voices. We're the sixth group. And our role in all of this is to kind of engage head on with the politics of this abortion amendment and to talk to people across the political spectrum about their support for it. And we've been incredibly successful in a short period of time. And I'm thrilled to be moving into phase two, the campaign phase of this referendum. And I think it's ours to win.
The Florida's law on constitutional amendments is that they require 60% support. So that's a lot in a red state. If I'm not mistaken, this issue hasn't hit 60% in any red state so far. How do you get to 60% in Florida?
You get to 60% in Florida by being really focused about who you're talking to, how you're talking about abortion access, and getting people to understand that it's an issue that transcends politics. In other words, you basically have to give people who are independents and Republicans permission to agree with you on this thing, to disagree with their individual candidate or their party, and to split that ticket if that's what they feel they need to do. And while, yes, 60% can be an intimidating threshold, Florida has passed referenda at the 60% threshold over and over again over the last decade.
All right, so this gets into a little bit of the tension between what you're trying to do and hit 60% in a red state in a presidential year and what we're seeing from the enthusiasm from the Biden campaign this week, which argued after the Supreme Court's decisions that Florida was suddenly, quote, winnable. You just talked about voters need to split the ticket. Julia Chavez Rodriguez, she doesn't want the Biden campaign manager. She doesn't want people to split the ticket. She wants people going to support your amendment and voting for Joe Biden.
Then she's going to have to make that case, Ryan.
Well, exactly. You're getting at my question here. How does that complicate things? You've got one mission. Your mission is not to elect Joe Biden, right?
No, my election is to pass Amendment 4. I do not live in a hole in the ground. I understand this is a real opportunity for people in this universe. It just so happens we're going to be on the November 2024 ballot in Florida, and all sorts of people and candidates in all kinds of races are looking at this as an opportunity for synergy. But I'm not trying to be naive when I say more people support abortion access than probably support Santa Claus. It would be a crazy thing in 2024 in Florida to not support Amendment 4, to not support abortion access. I don't look at it as threatening. I look at it as smart people who are reading the room and realizing that 75% of Floridians reject the 6-week abortion ban. It's really unpopular here. And so I would never look at any candidate who agrees with me on this issue and say, please don't talk about Amendment 4 because you're running in a partisan race. I say the more the merrier. Just make the tent as big as possible on this particular issue and let individual candidates and campaigns find their own way.
Would it help your campaign if Donald Trump came out and supported your amendment?
I hope everyone who supports our amendment comes out and says so on the record, no matter who they are.
Do you think there's a chance of that?
I have no idea. I don't even have any way of pretending to know.
I mean, just politically, obviously, it would be better. I assume that would be better for you, although I'm not sure that the Biden campaign thinks that would be advantageous for them.
We're in this situation because the Florida legislature passed a 15-week ban and then went back a year later and passed a 6-week ban. We are just closing up another session of the Florida legislature. If they had wanted to take this off the table, if it was Governor DeSantis's camp when he was running in the Republican primary, they could have simply undid it during the legislative session. In fact, Governor DeSantis could call a special session tomorrow, right, on this issue, repeal the 6-week ban, announce they got it wrong, they've decided they changed their mind, right? And to some extent, take it off the table. If they wanted to, That's in their power to do. And they haven't done it.
Well, that's DeSantis. He didn't, because, you know, he lost the nomination. The president, Trump's going to be the nominee, and he criticized the 6-week ban. We all know, I know the politics of this.
Correct.
He's obviously very proud of the Supreme Court justices he picked that overturned Roe v. Wade. But he has a kind of interesting political decision to make here about Amendment 4. And it just seems to me that it would be good for your campaign if Trump came out in favor of Amendment 4, no?
I want everybody who supports Amendment 4 to come out and say so. Whoever you are, whatever your name, whatever your party affiliation, whatever your religious background, if you support Amendment 4, I would hope that people would have the courage to say so and say so on the record. And then even for those who don't want to engage on the record and don't even want to engage in this publicly, I would hope that they would go into the ballot box and vote their conscience. And that holds to individuals, whether they are candidates or not.
All right, you're being, I'm just trying to tease out the politics
I know,
of this for you are tricky. This isn't easy, Anna. I'm just, it's, right? Because you're,
you know what,
you,
the,
you know,
the,
yeah, go ahead.
So the, you know, the, I think the politics are really straightforward on this because I'm lucky enough that I'm working on an issue. I'm not working on a campaign per se.
Right.
I'm not working for a political party. It's one of the reasons why Florida Women's Freedom Coalition has been doing such good work as part of the coalition to get Amendment 4 on the ballot and to get it to pass, is that we are a single-issue PAC. We are a bipartisan PAC. We have advisors on board, like our former House Representative Carlos Lacasa, who's come out very strongly in favor of Amendment 4, who can make very persuasive political arguments from his perspective as a conservative Cuban Catholic Republican former elected official in Florida about why he thinks Amendment 4 is the right thing to do and why he's going to be voting for it. And keeping my arms wide open has done nothing except help this initiative.
Yeah. All right. Having said all that, the question that so many people are trying to figure out is the relationship between voters who are enthusiastic about going to the polls and supporting Amendment 4, but may not like Joe Biden so much. And, you know, what does your polling say about that? Does the Biden campaign, their enthusiasm about this potential relationship, is it warranted? Do you see this driving turnout for progressive candidates? Did that happen in previous amendment fights in previous elections, or is it voters distinguish between the top of the ticket and these issues, and it really has no relationship whatsoever, and the Biden campaign shouldn't expect it to?
It's really complicated. I would say that there are some elements of the moment here that are unique to November 2024. So it's hard to draw conclusions about what Florida voters will do and what the voter universe will do inside the ballot box, because this is the first time that we've had the confluence of a statewide referendum on an issue in Florida that has coincided with a statewide or nationwide campaign that has chosen to focus on that exact issue.
Right.
And I think that that is probably the thing that makes this situation so hard to get a handle on, is we really haven't ever seen it. When we were doing restoring voting rights to felons in Florida, Governor DeSantis was not campaigning on that amendment one way or the other. And there was no presidential campaign dumping hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars into the national debate about restoring voting rights to felons.
I think
abortion access is the most compelling political issue, at least domestic political issue, in America right now. I think everyone in America is talking about it. And I think that that is really the thing that makes it different. I think you're going to have candidates, whatever their position on abortion, telling their voters, whether they're in California or New York State or Texas or Florida, a vote for your presidential candidate is a vote on access to abortion. It's either banning abortion at the state level or, you know, wanting abortion access protected at a national level. And that's a pretty stark political choice to give people at the top of a ticket while simultaneously asking them to vote about an abortion amendment at the bottom. Yeah. I don't know whether the bottom's going to push the top or the top is going to push the bottom, but I certainly think that more people feel positively about access to abortion than they do about any particular political candidate.
Brought to you by the Small Business Payments Alliance. According to a new survey, an overwhelming majority of small business owners oppose additional government regulations on the electronic payment system, as called for in the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. Don't let Durbin-Marshall pile new mandates on Main Street small businesses. Learn more at smallbusinesspaymentsalliance.com.
Let's talk about the amendment language. There's an art to writing these amendments because Florida, I think, is the only state or one of the only states where the Supreme Court has to vet the constitutional amendment. And of course, that's the big test you all passed on April 1st. The Florida Supreme Court gave you guys the go-ahead to have this on the ballot. But I believe I took this from the PDF of the Florida website. No law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability or when necessary to protect the patient's health as determined by the patient's health care provider. That's the first sentence. And the second sentence is, this amendment does not change the legislature's constitutional authority to require notification to a parent or guardian before a minor has an abortion. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of the language. How did you come up with those two sentences?
The first thing I have to acknowledge is that a lot of the heavy lifting was done on writing that language by working groups. And there were this kind of shifting constellation of working groups. Most of them were people that were associated with Planned Parenthood and ACLU and had worked or had worked on other statewide referenda at other times in Florida. I mean, every state is its own universe when it comes to this sort of thing, right? It's what's the law in the state where we are? What's the process for getting something on the ballot? What's the process for getting something to amend the Constitution? What's the legal history of the issue in our state? Then you have to figure out, you know, what you want to say, what you want to do, and then you have to poll it. You have to look when you have a disagreement between one noun and another noun, one verb and another verb. You really do have to spend the time and money polling these things to see whether moving a comma or changing an adverb changes what voters perceive of this language. And so you really do have a data-informed process. You do.
So that process took place in 2023. Or immediately after Dobbs?
Yes, in the spring of 2023, that process was already going on. So we didn't officially launch this petition drive until June 1st. And that the first half of 2023 was really spent sort of circling the horses, organizing, and figuring out what we wanted to do so that we could avoid some of the problems that other referenda have had across the country. I mean, we had the great advantage in Florida of being able to learn from other states. So
tell us about that. What did you learn from the other post-Dobbs? And you're talking specifically mm-hmm. about post-Dobbs, or were there referendum in the pre-Dobbs era that offered important lessons?
You know, I looked at that Wisconsin Supreme Court race that got a ton of national attention and a huge amount of money was put into it. That was basically a proxy election about abortion access in Wisconsin. And I think anybody who reads that election differently is choosing not to see what's right in front of them. So I went through these 11 different elections that I considered either direct or proxy elections about abortion. And I tried to look for some common themes in them. I looked at the data, not only in what their polling told them about their messaging and about the voter universe that they expected, but we were lucky enough to be able to do an autopsy afterward, because my hypothesis about Florida is that as much as we like to underscore, you know, hashtag Florida man, all the crazy stories out of Florida, we all like to think about Florida as, you know, the place that people go when something's gone wrong somewhere else. So it tends to collect some of the crazier folks in America. That may be true. But within our uniqueness, Floridians do tend to follow some national trends. We're not so far off the median American voter point of view that data isn't useful to us. And so that was how we kind of put it together and how we started to triangulate the best way to attack this. And the one thing that became clear from the get-go was Floridians are interested in freedom, personal freedom. And that became one of the North Stars of the entire petition. And I think it'll be one of the North Stars of the campaign statewide.
Just give us some of the big takeaways from those 11 campaigns.
I mean, the top takeaway from those 11 campaigns is that abortion access is really popular with Americans. That a lot of us had been trained in the political world, even in the repro rights and human rights world, to kind of dance around the word abortion. You know, you started hearing all these
Joe Biden recently.
For a long time in politics, you know, reproductive health care and women's health care and women's rights sort of became synonymous with access to abortion. I think the evidence shows, at least in the way that voters behave, the way that voters vote across America, that abortion is not a dirty word. And that holds true everywhere, whether it's Kentucky or Ohio or California. And that holds true in Florida as well. The polling has been phenomenal. And it mirrors a lot of what happened in other states. For example, our early polling showed that 57% of Trump voters in Florida actually support our referendum to put abortion access in the Florida Constitution. The other thing we learned is that people find abortion somewhat ethically fraught. The idea that, you know, if you support abortion access, that you are hardened to the human stories, to the complicated feelings that people have about abortion, does not bear out. In fact, I would say most Americans acknowledge that, you know, abortion is complicated. Abortion can be very, very complicated, not just medical abortion, but elective abortion. The circumstances around each and every one of these abortions can be something that gives people pause. And interestingly, it seems to be that what we need to do in politics around abortion is lean in to that by saying it is complicated, it is fraught. We're not having a referendum about pap smears, Ryan. We're not having a referendum about breast self-examinations. Nobody goes to a women's clinic and says, I need care. You walk in and you ask for something very specific because you need it, and that's an abortion. And so we need to be able to say the word and have conversations with voters, assuming that they are functional grown-ups. Because when we do, on this issue at least, we find that time and time again across America, they vote yes.
So not dancing around the obvious, the main issue. And
exactly.
Using the word. This is a little off the chronology here, but did it bother you in the State of the Union that Joe Biden didn't use the word abortion?
I wished he had, because I think everybody who's working in politics in America looks at getting a mention in the State of the Union as sort of reaching the top of Mount Everest. So one part of me says, yes, I wish he'd used the word abortion in the State of the Union. And the other part of me, the grown-up, who's not selfish and is able to see the bigger picture, is amazed that about a minute and a half of the State of the Union was about abortion access. Whatever euphemisms he chose to use, he talked about my issue in ways that I have not heard a president talk about abortion ever. You know, the president of the United States is saying the issue that's my number one priority is a number one priority for him. I can't complain too much about that, frankly, even if it wasn't exactly the way I would want it to happen.
Did you all make that position clear to the White House?
I did. I mean, insofar as I talked to people that were working in the White House and were working on this speech, but, you know, who am I to tell the president what to say during the State of the Union, honestly? You know, I'm sure there were a lot of people who were making suggestions about what should be said. I shouldn't have expected mine to end up at the top of the pile.
All right, let's go back to the language and help us understand the two sentences and why this language?
It's 49 words. It's two sentences. It's plain language. Viability has been defined under Florida statute since 1979. It's the Roe standard, so it is the most straightforward way, at least from a Floridian perspective, to talk about abortion access. And interestingly, it's also the way that polls the best. People who find themselves in these circumstances with their doctors talk about the issue of viability, which is a very straightforward thing. It's the point at which you understand that the fetus will survive outside the womb without extraordinary medical intervention. And that is a fungible place. It depends on what's wrong with the fetus, what's wrong with a woman, what sort of medical care is available. The opponents like to underscore that as a weakness in the issue. I actually think it's a strength. I think it's all the more reason why it's the decision that should be made by a doctor, made by a medical team, made by a patient and her family with their healthcare provider, and not arbitrarily defined somewhere far, far away by people who don't understand the context of any particular situation or case.
So the first part of the sentence is about viability, and then the second part of the sentence, the or, is to protect the patient's health as determined by a healthcare provider.
Correct. Yeah.
Just so listeners understand.
Correct. And the second sentence is a very straightforward sentence. Under the Florida standard, a constitutional amendment has to be single subject. There is language in the Florida Constitution that grants the authority to the legislature to require parental notification before a minor receives abortion services. And so we included that second line to make sure that it was clear to the Florida Supreme Court and to voters that this was a single issue and it didn't affect that authority. Ironically, it also makes it poll better because it makes it very clear to people that we're not asking them to throw up their hands and give up any sort of parental oversight over the lives of their children and people in their families. And it's a fabulous thing to be able to tell people so clearly what we want for them in such succinct language.
Generally, what week is scientifically is viability?
It generally falls somewhere between 22 and 24 weeks. But again, it depends what's wrong with the fetus, what is wrong with the mother, and what kind of healthcare is available, what kind of specialists are available, and what kind of resources are available. So for somebody living in a major urban center with a high-tech teaching university hospital down the road, the point of viability may be different than somebody who lives in a rural community far away from any sort of specialized medical care. And again, those are the sorts of calls we think that a woman and her family and her health team need to make, not people far away.
I want to ask you about the opponents and what they are seizing on in the language, and just read what the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops said the other day when the Supreme Court issued their decision. They write, under the guise of limiting government interference, this extreme ballot initiative would legalize full-term abortion, including when the baby is capable of feeling pain. If passed, the amendment to our state constitution would put the most innocent of human lives in grave danger until the moment of birth and would eliminate gains made over the past several decades to protect women from the harms of abortion, including health and safety protocols at abortion facilities. But the two things that they're seizing on is abortions allowed at a point when a baby can feel pain, when a fetus can feel pain, and secondly, that it would legalize full-term abortions. So I assume that's going to be an argument that you're going to hear a lot. How do you guys respond to that?
Well, I think there's a lot of soft or not very real science in that. I think, you know, there's a lot of misinformation that we're going to have to make sure that people understand. And once people understand the biology and the sociology behind a pregnancy and childbirth, most people end up supporting our amendment. And, you know, I don't want to go too far down the, you know, gynecological obstetric route here, but I can say that those are not concerns that we have. We don't think that there's science to support those positions. And then the abortion up to birth thing is really just a misrepresentation of exactly what happens during pregnancy and childbirth. Third trimester abortions are just exceedingly rare. They're well under 1% of abortions that are conducted in this country. They are always the result of truly tragic circumstances. And so the only response I can have to anybody faced with the issue of a possible third trimester termination is that we all need to mind our businesses and have tremendous compassion for those people, because they are dealing with an outrageous human tragedy. And they should have the privacy to do so with their medical team and their family and their faith leader. I hope it never happens to me or anyone that I love.
All right, Anna, explain what the other decision that the Supreme Court made the other day that was not exactly expected, and I want to get into what that means at a practical level for people in Florida, and then talk a little bit about the potential political effect.
Right. So, interestingly, the same day that they published the ruling on our abortion access referendum, the Florida Supreme Court published its ruling on the constitutionality of the 15-week abortion ban that was passed by the Florida legislature here about 18 months ago. It does not include any exceptions for rape or incest. It was challenged immediately on the grounds that it violates the state of Florida's right to privacy. Not content with the 15-week abortion ban, the Florida legislature reconvened for the following session and passed a 6-week abortion ban. Now, a 6-week abortion ban is, for all intents and purposes, a total abortion ban. The vast majority of women have no idea that they're even pregnant at 6 weeks. And so in the middle of this statewide referendum, we are given the opportunity to paint a pretty clear political picture about what the choice is. The choice is either total abortion ban or access to abortion before viability and when necessary to protect the patient's health. And I think it's a winner for us. It's a human tragedy. I would imagine over the next 8 to 10 months, we're going to start hearing horror stories like those we've been hearing out of Tennessee and out of Texas, where they have similarly banned abortion at these very, very early stages. And you're going to hear stories of people bleeding out onto bathroom floors. You're going to hear stories of women having to flee the state in order to get medical care. And I have no particular desire to see the women of Florida suffer from these barbaric circumstances. But I do have to acknowledge that it does help my movement show people in no uncertain terms exactly what the options are in front of them. It is a tremendous political opportunity on top of horrifying human crisis.
When the 6-week ban kicks in, what will the availability of medical abortions be in Florida?
That's still very to be determined, of course. We have this entire group out there now that wants to revive the Comstock Act back from 1873 and make the mailing of anything it considers, quote unquote, pornographic, which traditionally, when it comes to Comstock, included birth control, make it illegal. And, you know, the 6-week abortion ban contains language in it that is somewhat vague, but does make anybody who facilitates an abortion an accessory to a crime. So the question then becomes, who's facilitating? How are they facilitating? What counts as facilitating? You know, one of the consistent strategies that I'm seeing come out of this very, very extreme Florida branch of politics is writing these laws in ways that are quite broad and quite vague in order to intimidate people into not acting, because, of course, healthcare providers don't want to be arrested for serving their patients. Husbands don't want to be arrested for driving their wives to a clinic yeah. or to a doctor's appointment. And anybody who really cares about not ending up inside a courtroom and being accused of a terrible crime while providing healthcare to somebody is, I think, necessarily going to be stumped here. They want to make it as confusing, as frightening, and as intimidating as possible. You know, I think it's entirely likely that we're going to see people, or we're going to see people arrested. We're going to see people accused of and defending themselves for simply helping their family members.
And the last thing, Anna, and I probably should have told you about this before you came on, so I'll give you a second if you need it. But sure. At the end, we usually end the show with a question from one of our last guests. And then I'm going to ask you to come up with a question for our next guest, and even though you don't know who okay. that person is. So the easy part is the question from the last guest. So in this case, it happens to be two guests ago. And that person, their question was, who do you think Donald Trump's running mate will be?
Oh, am I expected to give a serious answer to that? How would I know?
Well, you know, you can give any answer you want, but but you're smart, sophisticated, politically savvy. I'm sure you have some thoughts about this. Not who do you want it to be, but who do you think it'll be?
Literally, my mind is completely blank. I cannot even come up with a response to that.
We stumped you.
I'm sitting here with my mouth open, staring out a window, going, I just can't even come up with a cogent response to that. And that's the best answer I can come up with. I have no idea. And I would imagine no one else does either. And anybody who tells you that they do is lying.
All right. Fair enough. I know I put you on the spot here and didn't tell you about this, but give us a question for our next guest who you don't know who they're going to be. So that's part of the fun here.
Okay, a question for the next guest, and I don't know who they are. Well, I guess, what do you think America should do about TikTok?
All right, I like that. That's good. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Thank you for playing along with that, and best of luck in the campaign. You know, obviously, we'll be watching it very, very closely.
Well, same. Thank you for having me on. Thanks for paying attention to this. It's been quite a struggle to get people to believe. A lot of people are starting to believe. Feels good.
And that's our show. Our producer is Kara Tabor. Our senior producer is Alex Keeney. I'm Ryan Lizza, host and executive producer of Deep Dive. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Tell us what you think about the show or who you'd like to hear on Deep Dive. You can email me at rlizza@politico.com. And please subscribe to Playbook Deep Dive wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.